Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
You don't have the authority to arrest U.S. citizens.
Sir,
you don't have the authority to arrest U.S. citizens. I'm not obstructing. I'm standing right here in the hallway. I have to see the judicial warrant.
Hi, I'm the controller's press secretary. Where are you taking the controller of the New York, the city of New York?
ICE agents arrest another public official, this time at immigration court here in New York. City Controller Brad Lander was attempting to escort a migrant out of the building at the time. Lander will join us in studio. But first, dangers of a widening war in the Middle East. The U.S. appears on the edge of entering the Israel-Iran conflict.
The majority of those harmed in these past few days, if we look at the proportion, are women and children. These are all war crimes. They must be documented, and those responsible, their supporters, and those who justify these actions must be held accountable. In my opinion, worse than committing a crime or atrocity is justifying the crime.
And as Israel's attack on Iran overshadows its assault on Gaza, we'll speak with Pulitzer Prize-winning Palestinian poet Masab Abu Toha on the deepening crisis. Civilians in Gaza have repeatedly been killed while attempting to access aid.
We went to wait like other people to get food for our children. We have not seen food or drinks for 6 months. We went to wait like other people. They told us there's flour in a certain area, so we went and waited. Then we found rockets falling on us, missiles falling on us, and the quadcopter falling on us.
That and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has warned any U.S. military action in Iran will be, quote, met with irreparable harm. Khamenei's warning comes a day after President Trump demanded Iran's unconditional surrender. Trump also directly threatened Khamenei by writing on Truth Social, the U.S. knows exactly where he is, adding, quote, we are not going to take him out, at least not for now, unquote. Multiple reports indicate Trump is moving closer to ordering U.S. airstrikes on Iran after months of supporting negotiations. On Tuesday, Trump, after leaving the G7 summit early, dismissed findings by his own intelligence agencies on Iran. In March, the director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, told lawmakers the intelligence community, quote, continues to assess that Iran is not building a nuclear weapon, unquote. On Tuesday, Trump dismissed Gabbard's testimony, saying, quote, I don't care what she said, unquote. This all comes as Israel continues to attack Iran for a sixth day, forcing thousands of people to flee Tehran. More than 50 Israeli warplanes struck targets inside Iran in the early hours of today. Iran responded by firing ballistic missiles and launching drones at Israel. According to one count, Israeli strikes since Friday have killed at least 585 people across Iran and wounded over 1,300. Iranian strikes on Israel have killed at least 23 people and injured more than 630. On Capitol Hill, Democratic Senator Tim Kaine called on his colleagues to support his war powers resolution to prevent a U.S. war with Iran.
I happen to believe that the United States engaging in a war against Iran, a third war in the Middle East since 2001, would be a catastrophic blunder for this country.
Meanwhile, there's a growing split within Trump's MAGA coalition over the prospect of a U.S. attack on Iran. Conservative TV host Tucker Carlson has railed against what he calls warmongers within the Republican Party. On Tuesday, video went viral of him interviewing the hawkish Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz.
If you don't know anything about the country—
I didn't say I don't know anything about
the country. What's the ethnic mix of Iran?
they are Persians and predominantly Shia. Okay,
you don't know anything about Iran. So
I am not the Tucker Carlson expert on Iran.
You're a senator who's calling for the overthrow of the government.
You're the one
who don't know anything about the country.
In Gaza, the death toll from an Israeli attack on aid seekers in Khan Yunis on Tuesday has reached 70. Hundreds of Palestinians were also wounded after Israeli forces used tanks, drones, and machine guns to fire on crowds who'd gathered hoping to receive bags of flour. The Nasser Medical Complex was overwhelmed with victims. This is Dr. Mark Brunner, a doctor from Oregon who's volunteering at Nasser Medical Complex.
Every time we know that there's a few so-called food distribution, we know that there's going to be annihilation. And, you know, the first couple of days, we were seeing a lot of isolated injuries, head or chest or abdomen. But today, it's reported that tanks have been used at the food distribution centers, which makes sense because we're seeing multi-trauma. We're seeing head, neck, chest, abdomen, extremities, many, many deaths. And it just doesn't have to be this way. You know, this is something that's just got to stop.
In Geneva, a group of UN experts told the UN Human Rights Council Israel is committing war crimes and the crime against humanity of extermination. This is former UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Navi Pillay.
These attacks were part of a widespread and relentless assault against the Palestinian people, in which Israeli forces have committed war crimes, including directing attacks against civilians and willful killing, and the crime against humanity of extermination. The goal of the Israeli government is abundantly clear: the destruction of life in Gaza.
Here in New York, ICE agents arrested New York City Comptroller Brad Lander Tuesday as he was escorting a man at an immigration courthouse in Lower Manhattan. Lander, who was running for mayor, was handcuffed and detained by agents after he demanded to see a judicial warrant as agents tried to detain the man he was accompanying.
Stop back. You don't have authority to arrest U.S. citizens.
Sir,
you don't have the authority to arrest U.S. citizens.
Stop back.
You don't have the, I'm not obstructing. I'm standing right here in the hallway. I asked to see the judicial warrant.
You're arresting the
by asking the for a judicial warrant?
Stop back, guys.
You don't have the authority to arrest U.S. citizens asking for a judicial warrant.
Brad Lander was held for several hours in the latest confrontation between Democratic politicians and federal immigration agents. Other mayoral candidates denounced Lander's arrest. New York State Assemblyman Zohran Mamdani wrote, "This is fascism." And former Governor Andrew Cuomo said the arrest is an example of the, quote, extreme thuggery of Trump's ICE out of control. City Comptroller Brad Lander will join us later in the hour. On Capitol Hill, California, Democratic Senator Alex Padilla took to the Senate floor Tuesday to recount how federal agents shoved him into a hallway floor and handcuffed him last week when he attempted to ask a question during a press conference held by Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem.
I was pushed and pulled, struggled to maintain my balance. I was forced to the ground, first on my knees, and then flat on my chest. And as I was handcuffed and marched down a hallway, if that is what the administration is willing to do to a United States senator for having the authority to simply ask a question, imagine what they'll do to any American who dares to speak up.
ICE agents are continuing to carry out raids around Los Angeles. On Wednesday, protests broke out in Pico Rivera after masked armed agents raided multiple locations in the city, including a Walmart. They detained a number of people, including at least one U.S. citizen. Video showed ICE agents cocking assault rifles and pointing them at civilians. 10 Democratic lawmakers are seeking more information about how the tech company Palantir is helping the Trump administration build what the lawmakers described as a government-wide searchable mega database that connects sensitive tax and other government data. In a letter to Palantir CEO Alex Karp, the lawmakers described the database as a, quote, surveillance nightmare that, quote, will make it significantly easier for Donald Trump's administration to spy on and target his growing list of enemies and other Americans, unquote. A federal judge in Boston's ruled the Trump administration must restore more than $1 billion in grants cut by the National Institutes of Health as part of a White House effort to end research linked to diversity, equity, or inclusion or gender ideology. U.S. District Judge William Young, who was appointed by President Reagan, said, quote, this represents racial discrimination and discrimination against America's LGBTQ community. Young went on to say, quote, I've sat on this bench now for 40 years. I've never seen government racial discrimination like this, the judge said. On Capitol Hill, Senate Republicans are pushing for sweeping cuts to Medicaid and to stricter work requirements for Medicaid recipients. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer warned the Republican Senate proposal will be deeper and more devastating than the cuts already by the House. He wrote online, quote, this could lead to even more than the 16 million people expected to lose health insurance and hundreds of hospitals and health centers facing higher risk of closure. CNN reports the Environmental Protection Agency has directed staff overseeing the states in the Midwest to stop enforcing violations by the fossil fuel industry. The move is in line with EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin's pledge to orchestrate the largest deregulation action in U.S. history. EPA staff overseeing southern states, including Texas, Louisiana, and New Mexico, have also effectively halted enforcement actions against polluting companies. In Memphis, Tennessee, the NAACP has announced plans to sue Elon Musk's artificial intelligence firm xAI for violating the Clean Air Act by running a massive data center near a historically black neighborhood without legal permits. Musk's facility runs on 35 methane gas-powered turbine generators, which emit significant amounts of nitrogen oxide and other toxic chemicals. NAACP President Eric Johnson said, quote, we cannot afford to normalize this kind of environmental injustice, where billion-dollar companies set up polluting operations in black neighborhoods without any permits and think they'll get away with it because the people don't have the power to fight back, unquote. To see our coverage of this issue, go to democracynow.org. In other environmental news, a new report has revealed the world's largest banks committed nearly $900 billion last year to finance coal, oil, and gas projects. That's a 23% increase over the previous year. Altogether, the world's largest 65 banks have committed $7.9 trillion to the fossil fuel industry since the Paris climate deal was reached a decade ago. In Georgia, a woman who was declared brain dead nearly 4 months ago has given birth to a baby boy via emergency C-section. Doctors had kept the mother, Adriana Smith, on life support against the wishes of her distraught family. Her body was kept on life support due to the state's near-total abortion ban. Adriana Smith's mother has described the months-long ordeal as torture. Adriana was scheduled to be taken off life support Tuesday. And Saudi Arabia has executed the prominent journalist Turki Alcaser, who was arrested in 2018 and convicted on what press freedom advocates say are trumped-up charges. The Committee to Protect Journalists said, quote, the international community's failure to deliver justice for Jamal Khashoggi did not just betray one journalist. It emboldened de facto ruler Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to continue his persecution of the press, unquote. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show in Iran. In a televised address, Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has rejected President Trump's calls for unconditional surrender and warned Iran will meet any U.S. military action in Iran with, quote, irreparable harm. Trump's directly threatened Khamenei by writing on Truth Social that the U.S. knows where he is, adding, quote, we are not going to take him out, at least not for now. This comes as multiple reports indicate Trump is moving closer to ordering U.S. airstrikes on Iran. On Tuesday, he dismissed findings on Iran by his own intelligence agencies. In March, the director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, told lawmakers the intelligence community, quote, continues to assess that Iran is not building a nuclear weapon, unquote. On Tuesday, Trump dismissed Gabbard's testimony when asked about it by reporters.
Tulsi Gabbard testified in March that the intelligence community said Iran wasn't building a nuclear weapon.
I don't care what she said. I think they were very close to having one.
This all comes as Israel's continuing to attack Iran for a sixth day, forcing thousands of people to flee Tehran. More than 50 Israeli warplanes struck targets inside Iran in the early hours of today. Iran responded by firing ballistic missiles and launching drones at Israel. According to one count, Israeli strikes since Friday have killed at least 585 people across Iran and wounded over 1,300 others. Iranian strikes on Israel have killed at least 23 people and injured over 630. On Capitol Hill, Democratic Senator Tim Kaine called for his colleagues to support his war powers resolution to prevent a U.S. war with Iran.
I happen to believe that the United States engaging in a war against Iran, a third war in the Middle East since 2001, would be a catastrophic blunder for this country.
Meanwhile, there's a growing split within Trump's MAGA coalition over the prospect of the U.S. attacking Iran. Conservative TV host Tucker Carlson has railed against what he's called warmongers within the Republican Party. On Tuesday, video went viral of him interviewing the hawkish Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz.
If you don't know anything about the country...
I didn't say I don't know anything about
the country. What's the ethnic mix of Iran?
They are Persians and predominantly Shia. Okay,
you don't know anything about Iran. So,
okay,
actually,
I am not the Tucker Carlson expert on Iran.
You're a senator who's calling for the overthrow of the government. You don't know anything about the country.
For more, we're joined by two guests. In Washington, D.C., Akbar Shahid Ahmed is the senior diplomatic correspondent for HuffPost, where his latest pieces are headlined, Israel's War on Iran Bears the Echo of Past American Mistakes. And another article, the pro-Israel U.S. general quietly influencing Trump on Iran. But we begin in Tehran with Mohammad Marandi, professor of English literature and Orientalism at the University of Tehran, part of the nuclear deal negotiations in 2015. We welcome you both back to Democracy Now! Mohammad Marandi, let's begin with you. You're in the capital of Iran, in Tehran, the capital that where President Trump has said everyone should leave. Can you talk about what's happening? Describe the scene on the ground. How are people dealing?
Well, the administration here has facilitated people leaving Tehran since a few days ago. Many government agencies are now allowing people to work from home or to take vacation. And university and school exams have been canceled for now so that those who want to leave city can do so. So Trump's warning, which is an act of terror, really didn't have a huge impact. Many people had already left. People like myself are here in Tehran. Actually, I'm in the Iranian National Television and Radio buildings, and one of the buildings that's been evacuated. I'm here because the internet is a bit better, is better than outside. And as you know, the day before yesterday, they bombed the Iranian radio and television network and murdered a number of journalists.
And Professor, we have all these reports of the targeted killings or assassinations of key leaders and scientists in Iran. To what degree do you feel that this terror campaign of Israel has destabilized Iran's top leadership?
Actually, these terror attacks have united the country more than ever before, or at least since in my opinion, when Saddam Hussein invaded Iran. Those assassinations were carried out during the first hours of this unprovoked attack, and they bombed apartment blocks to get people. They, for example, in one apartment block where they were seeking to murder one or two high-ranking military officials, they killed everyone, 65 people, including over 20 children. So that was not, and Western media tries to celebrate this and to show how sophisticated such an attack is. It's not sophisticated. My neighbors know where I am. Their neighbors know they live there. There's nothing sophisticated about slaughtering everyone in a building, in an apartment building, to murder one or two people. But that's, of course, what the Israeli regime has done across the board. They destroy apartment blocks in Beirut. And, of course, Western media would call these Hezbollah targets in order to hide the crimes. And we've seen what they've been doing in Gaza for 21 months, this genocide, this Holocaust, where they're slaughtering everyone everywhere. So we shouldn't have any expectations for the Israeli regime to behave any different towards Iranians, because for them, we are all Amalek.
And also, I noticed that in the last day or so, the Iranian government has urged its people to delete social media platforms like WhatsApp and Instagram. The government claims that these platforms are relaying information to Israel, geolocation information about individual Iranians. This prospect of these media companies or actually participating or colluding with Israel, what's your sense of that?
Yes, Meta is actively participating in the attacks on Iran. They are giving locations for academics, university professors. I, too, unfortunately, have WhatsApp. I do not have Instagram. My account was deleted by Instagram a long time ago. But I only have WhatsApp because many journalists are trying to contact me, and I don't have any other means but to stay in contact with some of these people. And, of course, people have asked me to give up my cell phone. But again, I have no option, because if I do, then I cannot conduct interviews. So I have to take this risk. But others are being encouraged to delete Instagram and to delete WhatsApp. And I encourage people across the world to do so as well.
I wanted to get your response, Mohammad Mirandi, to first the Iran Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, rejecting Trump's calls for unconditional surrender, warning that Iran will meet any U.S. military action in Iran with irreparable harm, the significance of him speaking out, and of Trump directly threatening him. We followed this over a few days. Trump has gone back and forth, U.S. officials saying that he stopped Netanyahu from targeting Ali Khamenei, but then threatening Ali Khamenei himself, and ultimately, most recently, writing, "We're not going to take him out, at least not for now." Can you talk about the significance of all of this and the U.S. Fleet moving closer to the Middle East, and Trump now apparently moving closer to getting directly involved, the whole issue of whether the U.S. would use something that they haven't yet given to Israel, which is a bunker buster bomb in Fordo?
Well, Trump and Netanyahu are two sides of the same coin. They are both genocidal, and they have no red lines. And the Iranians, of course, will ignore their threats and continue to defend the country's sovereignty against this unprovoked aggression and this war that's been imposed upon us. The Iranians have said very clearly that if the United States attacks, Iran will punish it severely. And Iran's underground drone and missile bases across the Persian Gulf region and the Indian Ocean are prepared for war. And I think those tiny Arab dictatorships in the Persian Gulf that have oil and gas installations, those that host American bases, and all of them do, if there is war, they these regimes will be swept away because those bases are on their territory, and ordinary Iranians believe that they are fully complicit in any aggression against Iran. So in case of any act of war against Iran by the United States, I think that that will be catastrophic for the global economy. It will bring about a Great Depression, worse than the 1930s in the United States.
Yeah, I'd like to bring in Akbar Shahid Ahmed, senior diplomatic correspondent for HuffPost. Akbar, your reaction to the events of the last couple of days in this Israeli attack on Iran?
I think while we're seeing a really tremendous risk, as Dr. Mirandi is saying, of the U.S. being pulled in, and we have to remember that in addition to, you know, the bases, the U.S. partners, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Bahrain, which are all major energy exporters, maybe not to the U.S., but to the global economy, to Europe, to China, to Asia. Beyond that, there are 40,000 U.S. troops, right? Many of them in Iraq, many across the region. Donald Trump, while saying that he was a peace through strength, anti-war president, we haven't seen him solve any of the wars that he said he would address, Ukraine, Gaza. In fact, now there's a new war unfolding on his watch, and he hasn't brought back any of these military deployments. What this tells us, really, is that because he's A, kind of crippled the federal government, he's undermined the State Department, there's chaos at the top ranks of the Pentagon, there isn't even capacity in the Trump administration to de-escalate at this point, and B, Trump didn't really have a clear strategic doctrine, right? For Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the goal of an attack on Iran, and frankly, a joint U.S.-Israeli attack on Iran, that's been a long-standing goal. He's wanted that for decades. Netanyahu, through the Biden administration, before Trump entered office, was able to amass more and more American support. And I think he looked at this and said, this is my moment. Trump can't stop me. I've had a clear goal. And so I think that's where we're at a moment of immense danger. The only kind of restraining de-escalatory force could really be the U.S. You have regional governments, Saudi Arabia among them, the Qataris, Oman, which has hosted talks between the U.S. and Iran. All these regional governments are trying to de-escalate, but what I hear from Arab diplomats is, while the Trump administration is issuing statements to them, even behind the scenes, saying, no, no, don't worry, we're not going to get the U.S. involved, there's a clear gap between that rhetoric, which matches Trump's, again, peace through strength, anti-war claims, and Trump's actual actions, which are indicating a very clear U.S. military buildup and an increasing likelihood of a hugely devastating U.S. war with Iran.
Akbar, if you can talk about this latest piece, Israel's war on Iran, the latest piece that you wrote, on who is got Trump's ear?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Amy, it's really interesting, right? This is a team where the president has made personal fealty, personal loyalty, the main qualifying factor, right? You've seen him reject intelligence saying that Iran was not rushing towards a nuclear weapon. You've seen him devastate the State Department. You've seen him fire top military commanders, which means that the people around him are either really cowed or very weak or thinking about their own careers. Into that gap, the person that steps in and who I highlighted in this recent piece is someone called Eric Kurilla. That's the top U.S. military commander in the Middle East. He's a four-star army general. He's been in his position since 2022. And what was striking as I got to understand Kurilla's deep influence over Trump was a couple of things. He's, even by the standards of American officials who work really closely with Israeli counterparts all the time, Kurilla is seen as extremely close. One former U.S. official told me, in internal deliberations, Kurilla often seemed to know what the Israelis were thinking and what intelligence they had before any other person in the American government. So there's that level of familiarity. He was in position under Biden, which was a period during which he worked really closely with the Israelis in the wars in Gaza, in Lebanon, and in Israel's defense, right, against Iranian barrages, which it did face in 2024. In that period, he began kind of joint planning with the Israelis for a U.S.-Israeli strike, and now it looks like the moment is ripe. And there's another just confluence of factors that increase the danger here. Kurilla is looking at his retirement date in the coming months, maybe even as soon as July. And the chatter among American and Israeli officials for a while has been, we want to get this joint U.S.-Israeli campaign